everyone, and welcome to Wild Trekking, episode 2.
Let's talk about living with the deadly 60.
Copyrighted.
Copyright apologies to Steve Batchel. But I thought it was interesting, we had a crocodile attack here during the week, and I thought it would be a good chance to talk about, obviously we live in Australia, which is filled with lots and lots of deadly animals.
Things that want to kill you.
But before you start asking, no, it wasn't a human, and no, it wasn't a cat. I wish I'd loved it was a cat. It's a dog.
Oh, no, you're sorry. There was a dog attacked by a crocodile.
So sad.
Yeah, we live in Cooktown in far north Queensland, which
it
is...
should have been a cat.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I don't think the cat would have been swimming off the boat.
I hate them. Okay, there's not too many swimming cats, but there was... It is sad, a pair of dogs quite close to the boat ramp at Martin, which is about 5 kilometres from Cooktown, and several people saw the dog taken by a crocodile. So
wait, was it like pulled under or was it just like snatched?
A bit of both, I think. It sort of grabbed the dog by the bum and then dragged him under the water. So I thought it was interesting because we live in quite close proximity to these crocodiles all the time, and we were out sailing the other day on our little Hobie Cat in the harbour here, and there was a crocodile swimming nearby.
And you could tell we chased the crocodile away, at least Mum did, because she was saying, "Dad, get the dinghy in close and I'll film it."
Well, I think that's interesting, isn't it? That when we tried to go close to this crocodile, it was about 3 metres long, so probably either a female or a young male. He basically ran away from us.
But Dad, Mum's the kind of person who thinks filming before safety.
Yeah, I know. We'll talk about that at her funeral one day, won't we?
She puts
filming first, as Mum. We're New Zealanders, so we come from one of the safest countries in the world. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about our Australian experience and a little bit about the Americas, because obviously in North America with the bears, mountain lions there, there are people coming into contact with these potentially quite dangerous animals. And we're also going to have an interview later on in the day with Dr. Alistair Frame, who's a friend of ours. And he was raised in Rhodesia, which became Zimbabwe in 1980. But obviously, African people are living with a lot of these big, they call them megafauna, the big five, and most of them are dangerous to humans. So
why did they change the name to Zimbabwe from Rhodesia?
Well, Rhodesia was named after Cecil Rhodes. I don't remember the name of the company, but basically when the current Zimbabwe was settled by white people from Europe, that was the name chosen for it. And then after independence in 1980, they chose the name Zimbabwe.
Yeah, because Zimbabwe is catchy.
Zimbabwe, obviously.
Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe does have a nice ring to it. Saltwater crocodiles, Harry, how big are they?
They can get to...
pretty big.
How long?
Do you want to have a...
like 2-3 metres? I've heard of 5-metre ones.
Yeah.
6 metres the biggest, I think. They recorded a 60-metre one.
Six meter one.
Yeah. And there's also an 18-foot one. But
yeah, I think 6 meter is getting up to the top end of the measured specimens. Most male crocodiles are between 4.5 and 5 meters and weighing somewhere between 700 and 1,000 kilograms. So fairly impressive. They live with us all around us all the time, don't they?
It is hard to tell all the animals in the wild how large they can get to, because you only know from the recorded amount. Like, there could be 12-metre crocodiles out there, no one would know.
Yeah. It's always, I think, these things do tend to be a little bit prone to exaggeration, don't they?
But there could be a giant squid out there. Do you know humans know more about the life, about the surface of the moon, than they do about the depth of the ocean?
But remember, we watched that footage together the other day, that first sort of wild footage of the giant squid?
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah, it was really... I must put a link to it on the show notes. It was... I'm trying to remember the name of the scientist now.
It's awesome.
But she gave a fantastic sort of TED talk, and...
Mum told us a story about giant squid in Opawa. It wasn't there, but this guy was sailing over from Fiji, and he was going really fast for the first half. Then he slowed down completely, and he was like, oh, well, probably... the boat's got
something, some weed on it or something.
Weed stuck to the bottom or something like that. And he got into Opua, and about 6 months later, he got the boat out of the water, and along one side, it was covered in these giant tentacle sucker marks.
Yeah.
So something latched onto that boat.
Spooky, spooky, spooky.
Well, yeah, that's sounds a little fanciful, doesn't it?
And he was never seen again.
And look, and I think that's where, you know, the stories of the Kraken and those sorts of things, you know, that's how these stories start, isn't it?
I've they're
a little bit unverified.
Do you remember when we were sailing through the Whitsundays in between Hook Island and White Island?
Ah, yes.
There's that little sort of thin passage with all the water that's all churned up.
Yep.
Everyone else was come, and here he was like, look out for the Kraken.
Because that's the name of it, the Kraken passage.
Yeah. And then we caught that delicious fish.
Yes, Mum's only fish that she got a photo of herself with, because Dad always takes credit for the ones she catches.
I do not. It's usually because I'm steering, and the person who is steering is the most important when it comes to catching fish.
Sprocky and I, we were the ones who were on Kraken watch. I was on one side of the boat, Sprocky was on the other side of the boat. I put Sprocky on the side where you could see the most churned up water, so she would be taken instead of me.
Right. Let's not get too far off topic. So I was just going to talk about some of the, you know, we're part of the population that have to live with these deadly animals.
Oh, I love how you say that, Dad. Whenever we see a snake, you'll be like, snake, and chase it about, because hardly ever see
them. Yeah, and that's the reality. Is like, I mean, Australia has a number of dangerous snakes, for example.
Yes, and
but a lot of Australians have hardly ever seen a dangerous snake.
There was a taipan at school once, a baby one.
Yeah.
They were all eating our lunch in the gutter, and this thing slithered past Laisha, and she's been,
Sandy, that sounds wrong. We're all eating our food out in the gutter.
Well, there's a gutter full of grass, so you sit in, and there's a bridge next to it.
Yeah, but funnily enough, what was the snake doing when you saw it?
It was chilling out, trying to get home, and Laisha's been, snake, Mr. wrapped up in toilet paper and took it away.
Yeah, so most of the time these dangerous animals are moving away from you when you see them. They have no interest in sort of confrontation with you.
It's spooky.
I like them.
Well, I think there's some, it's sensible to be somewhat frightened of this.
And it's sensible to be afraid of jellyfish.
Yeah.
Dad.
So let's talk saltwater crocodiles again quickly. It's actually a bit of a funny name, really, because they don't spend a great deal of time in salt water, do they?
No, they're mostly in freshwater.
Yeah, they travel via the ocean currents, you know, between estuaries, but they like mangrove-filled estuaries, don't they? So you're far more likely to see them in brackish or in fresh water. And you take some sensible precautions. Harry, what sort of things do you do around...
Well, you don't go up to the water and start splashing it.
Yep.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't start screaming. And you also don't go next to the water. You don't throw stinky things in.
Yes.
And then you don't start yelling out, come here, croc.
Well.
Another thing you've got to do is don't fish right next to the edge in murky waterways, and just don't swim anywhere that you can't see the bottom.
Yeah. Most people don't swim in the salt water here. There are some exceptions. There's a couple of very sandy, shallow bays where obviously you would see a crocodile from a mile away.
I would not go swimming in any sandy bay though, because I hate stingrays.
I would go swimming in close to the shore, but not start doing laps out in the deeper water where you can't see the bottom.
I would swim in a place where you can see the bottom, but it's rocky, so there aren't any stingrays either.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Very particular with our swimming spots.
Yeah, I can see that. And so one of the things about crocodiles is that if you keep back from the edge of the water, you've got almost no chance of coming into contact with them. They're not fast, despite there's all these legends about them being as fast as a racehorse. But
they say out of the water, they're as fast as a racehorse and can catch you. And
if anyone ever has the chance and takes a, you know, goes to Australia Zoo, which is in Beerwah, just north of Brisbane, which was obviously Steve Irwin's zoo and is now, you know, run by his wife Terry and Bindi, and I think Bob is taking more of a role there now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when crocodiles lunge out of the water, they're very fast, aren't they?
But when they go onto shore, they're like,
they're extremely slow moving. Wow. They've got this huge, heavy tail.
Another tip when it comes to crocodiles, I forgot about this one. Don't make build up routines near the water. Like, don't go for a walk same time each day.
Yeah.
Because after you go four or five times, crocodile will start to realise and lie in wait for you in the spot.
You've got it, yeah. So don't set up routines. And that's one of the problems with people who check crab pots. They often go and check crab pots at the same time each day.
Yeah,
and
after they finish work or before they get lunch or something like that.
Yeah, so you've got to be careful when you need to move your crab pots around and not set up any routines, that
stuff
sort of
like
thing.
That.
Yeah. What about great white sharks? I thought that's been quite
tropical.
That's an
interesting one. Thing is, great white sharks kill about two people a year.
And you're not going to get attacked by one because nobody goes off and wants it. And nobody wants to swim in the middle of the ocean.
And they don't generally, you might get attacked by sharks, by smaller sharks, if it's a murky estuary and you're wearing black clothing and look like a seal.
Mm.
But thing is, with great whites, they prefer colder waters and they need a deep place, and chances of one of them getting you is.
Yeah, so
I'm just saying that people don't go off and swim
fishing. When you're spearfishing, they say that you've always got to get your fish out of the water quickly because that's when you'll get attacked by
Excuse me, Dad.
Yes, sir.
But I'm just saying that people please don't go off and decide to swim in the middle of the Pacific because it's not a very good idea if there are sharks.
Yeah, well, that's certainly surfers and spear fishermen who go into, the shark's terrain, domain, do take on some degree of risk, don't they? And a lot of them are pretty happy to accept that risk, that four or five people are killed by sharks in Australia worldwide, about 30 maybe.
30 a year.
It's about like bull sharks.
Compared to 1,000 on the roads in Australia.
We kill tons of sharks every single day and they only kill 30 of us in a year.
Yeah, I think it's like 300,000 sharks are killed a year and they kill 30 humans. People face the facts, humans are dangerous or something like that.
Face the facts, humans are the top predator.
Yeah, well, that's probably a little bit off topic today, but in terms of shark finning and fishermen killing sharks.
Shark fin soup is bad, people.
Yeah, so, okay. So what about snakes? Because we also had a lady bitten by a snake in Cooktown during the week. She was bitten by a death adder while she was doing gardens up on Grassy Hill, which is just above the town here. She took her gloves off to do something in the gardens.
Excuse me, Dad, but everybody says that Grassy Hill is like a top place for death adders.
Yeah, no, there's lots of death adders all over the rocky bits of Grassy Hill. And the thing about death adders, they're quite a small snake and they sort of lie in wait for their prey.
They're really quite fat.
The deadliest ones, when we were chatting to Ian, who recently got his hand attacked by a crocodile, he said that it's surprising that most of the venomous snakes, like inland and outlet and coastal Taipan to a certain point, they're the snakes that you'll be walking over and not notice. They'll be the ones you think are sticks or...
Yeah.
And the ones that are less deadly, like carpet pythons, they're the ones you're going to spot.
Yeah, so one of the things in Australia, people who have jobs where they can't avoid that sort of contact tend to wear, ankle-high boots. So you wear high boots and thick trousers.
And gloves.
And, wearing gloves if you've got to work down and amongst them. So, and really, look, if you've got boots and trousers on, the chances of you getting a snake bite are just about zero.
Unless the snake has magical flying skills and somehow gets to your nose.
Well, let's hope
Kung
that wouldn't happen.
Snake.
I was going to talk about North America briefly, but we've spent some time skiing in Canada, and people are very aware of bear attack and mountain low. Well, there are rattlesnakes in parts of America.
Oh, yeah, but they aren't in the sand parts.
Tactic for bears. They're the hard ones because they can swim faster than you, they can run faster than you,
they can
climb faster than you.
Yep.
The only thing they can't do is fly. I was watching a bear, listening to a bear survival podcast the other night.
Yep.
And one of the tips is that when you're near a bear, talk. Might not want to give it away, but just be saying, hey, bear, yo, bear, I'm still here.
Because
the one thing you
can play
to
dead.
Is surprise a bear.
Yeah, so when you're tramping or camping, hiking in the States, people try and make a lot of noise. So often they ring bells quite a bit. And
play dead.
And some of them, if they go over a ridgeline or something like that, they'll even toot an air horn.
Yeah,
play dead.
No, you're talking about what to do if you're actually being attacked.
Yeah, but they just play dead.
No, they say that You should do that when you're with a big cat, because you know when a cat, when they kill the mouse, they're like, oh, fun's over. If you run away from a tiger, they're
going to think, this is a fun game.
You're acting like, this is a rodent and I'm going to chase it. So playing dead works quite well with cats.
So that's a good general rule with any megafauna, that running away from them is a complete waste of time.
But you don't do that with drones, otherwise they just run you over.
The exception obviously being a crocodile, because you're probably faster over the ground than a crocodile.
Indeed.
The bears are interesting, and there's a couple of sort of dangerous scenarios with bears. One is when you stumble up across a mother bear with cubs.
Yes,
they really get angry. Then they turn to the Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, and there have been, especially with black bears in the western parts of Canada, there have been what are called predatory attacks. So the bear is actually trying to kill you for food. And they're a concern. So people often carry bear spray as well, which is like...
bear spray.
Yeah, it's like a can of spray.
It shoots.
Yeah, it is exactly like pepper spray. Shoots a sort of spray about 4 or 5 metres, and it's obviously a bit of a last resort thing. It's probably closer than you want to get to a bear, but... it's good to have, and obviously people
like Tarzan and like swing over top of them and spray it quickly.
And people will carry firearms, and you know, when they, especially those who have got jobs like lumberjacks and people working in the wood industry. So those people who can't avoid coming into contact with bears, you know, will often carry
a weapon
of some sort. The other thing is a lot of the interest in bears and humans. The bears are after your food. So when you're camping in the in North America, you eat your food away from your campsite, and
don't leave a morsel of food lying about, because they say that if you have even half a piece or a tiny bit of cooked fish or meat in your pocket, the bear will smell it from 20 km
incredibly away. Incredibly sensitive noses.
Especially keeping chocolate bars in your pocket.
Yeah.
Dad, I heard this real, it was worst case scenario situations. And I remember we were talking about school one day, and this man and his 17-year-old daughter went hiking. And they ran into a group of not one bear, but one mother bear with three cubs, and one male bear who was super territorial at the time.
Yep.
Of course, the mother bear attacks the daughter, and the daughter plays dead, and she like gets hardcore mauled but survives.
Right.
And the father, he got like trapped against a cliff, bear on one side, cliff on the other, and he had to choose bear or cliff, and he jumped, and he surprisingly survived. I think he broke both his legs.
Oh, crikey. Okay. Yeah, so obviously food, what you do is you put your food in a bag and you hoist it up in the air. You know, so getting it about 4 metres up in the air. And obviously some people will even change clothes before they go to bed, so you're not in the same clothes that you ate your food in. So you're really reducing that aroma of food around your sleeping area.
That's why I really don't want to go camping somewhere.
No fancy camping around bears.
Oh, no.
Look, Harry, hundreds of thousands of people do, you know, camp in North America each year and don't run into any trouble.
Well, you know, it would be pretty bad, like, if you did run into a bear. But if you did run into a bear, you'll probably flip out.
What about mountain lions?
I don't really hear of that many situations of mountain lions.
Normally it's hitchhikers who are just going around stuff, and then...
Harry, you're saying that the foreigners are the ones that get eaten by mountain lions.
Well, it's because they go hitchhiking.
Do you know who does get eaten by mountain lions? It's children.
Oh, what?
What?
They'll often pick off, you know, the smallest member. Mountain lions are quite small, and they'll often pick off the smallest member of a group of people. So if you're walking with children, you always put the children in the middle.
Which one do you think they'll choose? Do you think that they would eat me or Monty?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I think they'll choose you because you're the scrawny one.
Monty's big and chunky.
When we're next in America, we'll do some experiments, okay? I was going to ask you, what do you know about wolf attacks?
Oh, yes, I know it. That wolves normally don't attack you.
No, there's never been a report of an uninjured wolf attacking a human in North America. They're not interested in predating humans. and they're going to move away from you. And you're quite right. If you've got a fire or something like that, they're not.
Excuse me, Dad.
They're going to leave you alone.
A lot of farmers don't like them because, yeah, it's because they go after their sheep and stuff.
Yeah,
and then they get shot and then they get told off for shooting wolves.
Yeah, so shooting wolves is illegal in many states in the United States. And
but
I believe
people
it's,
still shoot
yeah,
them.
Yeah, no, I know. And there's been a lot of work done. Shooting wolves can break down their pack structure. And one of the modern thinking is that if the pack structure is intact and you've got these large adult wolves leading the pack, they'll actually tend to stay in the wilderness areas. It's when people shoot these large adult wolves, the young wolves don't know what to do. And that's when they're going onto farmland. The wolves would far rather avoid contact with humans. And if the pack structures are strong, then they'll stay in the wilderness areas and leave.
They're not really interested in you.
No. No, so that's I think that's a pretty much a theme the whole way along, isn't it? That
but wolves are always depicted as the bad guys. Little Red Riding Hood. Have you heard the boy who cried wolf?
Yeah, boy who cried wolf. Little Red Riding Hood.
Look, it's a wolf.
Yeah.
And they're like, joking.
Twilight. The wolves are the bad guys.
The wolves are the bad guys. The wolves are the awesome guys. The vampires are the bad ones.
It depends whether you're Team Edward or Team Jacob.
Team
right. Hi everyone, we're back and we are sitting on the deck at the Frames house. So we're very lucky to know some genuine Africans who
yes.
are now living in Australia. So we've got Alistair and Julie Frame with us and their daughter Savannah, who was born in New Zealand. That's why we like her so much. As an extension of our Deadly 60 podcast, or Living the Deadly 60, we thought we'd find some genuine Africans and ask them how they managed to survive their African upbringing without being eaten by a lion.
Yeah, like, how are you still alive today
yeah.
and stuff?
So if you could just tell us where you were born for a start.
Well, first of all, I'd like to greet you. Mangwanani Maskwerese.
Excellent. Which is Shona, I assume.
It is Shona indeed.
Okay. So that we were actually talking about, and I know Rhodesia was named after Cecil Rhodes. Is Zimbabwe an exact, the borders remained the same after independence? There was no, it was just a change of name?
It was just a change of name.
Yes.
And
Government, obviously. Yeah.
And a government, yes.
Mm.
I'd like to have an elephant gun. I've heard that it's so large that you can like blast an elephant off its feet with them. How?
Yes, but you would go backwards too, Zanti.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Okay, have you ever shot an elephant gun? Oh, this is obviously part of the African experience.
Well, I shot with an FN magazine gun, but that was when I was a kid and it had a fair kick, but never...
No elephant guns.
I've shot a 416 Rigby, which was used for shooting Cape Buffalo.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This chap was a New Zealander, but went on safari in Africa every second year or something like that, and it was an extremely unpleasant experience.
What do you mean by unpleasant?
They've just got a tremendous kick. And they're loud and. Yeah, it's. I mean, if something was that wanted to kill you was charging at you, I would take the kick in the shoulder over the death by being eaten. But it was very unpleasant just to walk out the back of a New Zealand farmhouse and fire this thing into a target. It wasn't much fun.
That would
at all.
Be fat.
So sorry, we've lost. We've got off track. So
yes.
You were born in Rhodesia.
Yes, we were born in Rhodesia.
So I mean, you were raised in a village, town, city.
I actually grew up on a farm.
Yep. Mm. In the game parks, for example, I mean, why don't, the dangerous animals come into the camps and that sort of...
They do. They certainly do. And they're not sort of fenced off areas. I think for me, one of my first experiences as a teenager was I just joined a company called Canoeing Safaris and... It was part of Abercrombie and Kent, and we did canoeing trips down the Zambezi, so I had my familiarization. And I think my first experience was paddling and being very aware of all the hippos running off the edges of bank embankments, and they could land in your canoe. And there was one particularly cheeky boy that was around, that was a loner, and I was trying to get away from him, and the chap in the back of my canoe, the guide, was teasing me and trying to get closer and closer. And the next moment I remember looking up and thinking, gosh, that's a toenail. And I looked up further and then I saw the leg and it was an elephant. And we were that close that that was the first thing I noticed about him was his toenail. Okay. So you do get up at, very, very close. I do have one confession that the very first giraffe I ever saw was in the Denver Zoo. And and it had come from Zimbabwe, but an awful confession to have. But that was because, as I say, one didn't go on holidays in the bush when you were, you know, too much when you were
during
younger.
During your childhood. Yeah.
Okay. And again, when we did the canoeing safaris, we slept. We didn't have tents. We just sleep under the bush, under the stars and under the trees. And there were reportings quite often of elephants actually walking through the camp. And you could see their footmarks, the prints the next day, and they would actually step over your stretcher.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. And you wouldn't be aware because they tread so quietly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about, you know, if you talk about black Africans living in a more traditional setting?
Yes.
How do they protect themselves against, you know, the more dangerous animals?
Mm. Well, fire obviously is one of your biggest weapons, and you know, I think with
special huts, and spears, and dogs,
And so exactly like saltwater crocodiles or whatever, they will avoid human contact. If,
Because we're not that tasty.
No.
I heard that if you get in between a hippo and the water wants to get to, it will attack you.
It'll run over you.
You're worried about the hippos knocking you out of the canoes and then obviously the crocs getting you then.
Chewing.
Mm. Sounds like deep and serious people.
I was going to say, people paid you to go on these holidays? Yeah.
Oh, I heard a thing about rhinos that apparently if you're getting chased by one, they're supposed to either get behind the tree or wait till it gets a good like 5 to 10 meters away from you, then like make it a really sharp turn to stop them getting you. Do you think that would work? Like, would the weight of them stop them being able to make quick turns, or would they like just catch up to you quickly?
Well, I certainly know they have very poor eyesight. Mm. Animals with high body mass can't chase people effectively, and that's one of the we're going to get off topic here a little bit, but one of the reasons they suspect Tyrannosaurus Rex was an ambush hunter. That,
it's so big, how is it supposed to sneak up on people?
When it's running on two legs with its very heavy head, you know, 3 to 4 metres in front of its leg and very heavy tail behind, if you turned once or twice, it couldn't chase you. So, the heavy-bodied animals don't chase very effectively.
I heard elephants can't jump. Poor elephants.
I think it's elephants are the only animal that can't jump, aren't they? Or
Slugs can't jump.
Yeah. I guess we're talking about vertebrate animals. Zanthi takes us off topic.
Snakes can't jump.
No, that's cool. So.
But what about that poor teacher who met the hyena?
That was really quite sad. She's actually become a motivational speaker. So good has come out of it, but she was sleeping in her tent one night on the Zambezi, and a hyena came into her tent and attacked her eye, and she lost... attacked her.
Were game animals on the farm as well as domestic animals?
I think in some of the hills, yes, we did have a bit of game, but not a huge amount where we lived at that time. But when we actually were married and living in Mutari, our property bordered on the game park, and all we had was two strips of wire that electricity sometimes ran through. And on the other side, we often had the elephants come down, and Kirsty and Taryn, our two older girls, would get the dog biscuits and would feed the elephants.
How old were they at the time?
Probably about just a bit younger than Savannah and Amber.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that was always great fun. And the elephants were greatly rewarded the one day. Al, do you want to tell the story about that?
Oh, what we had, because we were right on the border with Mozambique, people would come across from Mozambique and they decided that they were going to pinch anything that they could from the houses in the area. and they went for garden furniture, and then they hid it in the game park prior to taking it back across the border. And the game park warden was doing a patrol one day, and he heard this funny noise. It was like ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. Yeah. And he's, what is this? And he went driving up into the park, and he sort of behind the bushes, and then he found the elephant standing there with a piece of garden furniture that he was smashing against other garden furniture. So he discovered, this elephant had discovered this huge stash of garden furniture and decided to smash it up. And they were rewarded with a bag of oranges.
Oh,
because they laid a trap there, and then they found the people who came to retrieve the furniture.
The reason why they were taking the furniture was to make coffin handles with all the people dying of AIDS. They needed
to melt them down.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Lovely. So this, and you know, obviously it's expensive. So that was the easiest way of getting it across the hill and into Mozambique. I remember another funny encounter. They were trying to move some of the rhino, and we had one rhino that had been caught in a fire, and her name was Daisy. Mm. And she'd been nursed back with her, because it was her pads. Do you call it pads?
Yeah, pads.
And they use umpteen bottles of Johnson & Johnson baby oil. But she did recover. You know, her ears were a bit damaged. But this particular day, when they were moving them from one boma to another, they managed to escape. And they were running down the main street of the town with traffic lights and everything like that. So that was quite amusing, you know, especially for people, since the majority of people don't have cars and are walking, suddenly to discover rhinos coming through the centre of town as they're doing their shopping. But they managed to capture them, and I don't think anyone was hurt.
Right, so let's wind things up gently.
Of course.
Okay, what's the main blog website address?
www.wildtracking.net. Net, that's it.
Excellent. You can find us now at Vimeo. If you search for Wild Tracking, you'll find our channel.
And we've got some like good videos up there and drone footage and things like that.
Yep. And you can find us on Facebook, Wild Tracking, and at Twitter for Wild Tracking.
Oh, we've got so many social media sites.
Yep. There. And for the podcasters, you found us already if you're listening to this, but obviously on Stitcher and iTunes Podcasts. And we'll see you next week, everyone.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.